Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Northern Ireland don't need to win, and that's the difference, and it's how they're going to cope with this pressure tonight. Northern Ireland will certainly not make it easy for them.
So much at stake for the Republic, for Jack Charlton. Dowie, Kevin Wilson, Quinn! Oh, yes! And what a goal by Jimmy Quinn!
Is there a final twist in this Irish story?
Comes straight out to McLaughlin! It's there! Alan McLaughlin has got it!
Was just checking with the officials on the touchline for information about the other score, and I'm sure the fact that Spain are winning 1-0 will have been relayed to these Republic players. Maybe a 1-1 result would be the perfect outcome, and it is a 1-1 draw.
Well, that paints the picture very, very nicely, doesn't it? 4 days short of the 25th anniversary of that iconic game.
Unbelievable times. I remember I was actually beforehand, we were probably a similar age watching that, but it's one of those games that just sticks out. And even though I was watching it in County Galway, you appreciated the tension,
yeah.
You know, and it was, I'll never forget the atmosphere that night. And just one of the images we had in that montage of, I think it was Andy Townsend, Ray Houghton and Paddy Bonner looking up probably at the Northern Ireland fans, and just like this trepidation, you know, they knew they were in a war. But that was a very different time. That was Belfast at that time was simmering with hatred.
Mm. Well, I'm delighted to say we've got a couple of people on the line. Julian Taylor from the Belfast Telegraph and Tony Cascarino who played that night. Cass, if I can start with you. When you hear those clips and when you think back now, firstly, it's nearly 25 years ago. Can you believe that?
Made me feel old, Keith. Hiya, boys. It was a very funny night for many different reasons. I mean, obviously, the match, as you alluded to there, that the atmosphere in Northern Ireland was very sour at that time. We had the army on our bus. We had to sit on the outside of the coach, and there was guys from the army in the inside, and you know, just felt around the hotel. There was obviously all the army soldiers walking around, protecting us. It was a very different era, and then from there it went to the match. And you know, I you probably know the story about me. I forgot my shirt in the dressing room. Jack asked me to go on. I think he was going to punch me lights out on the sideline. And luckily for me, as we're discussing about me grabbing David Kelly's shirt, and Jack saying, "You stupid big so-and-so, you'll get us chucked out of the tournament if you put David Kelly's shirt on." to be honest, Alan McLaughlin saved my life, and he made his name overnight, Alan. And he was such a nice guy, Alan, that, you know, he was that type of player to get that type of goal. And it was a very funny experience that night afterwards, because me and Andy Townsend were going back to Dublin on the bus, and we're talking about where we're going to go out, and we remembered that we thought we couldn't both get hold of our missus, and we thought, oh, they're coming over, they're going to be here when we get to Dublin, our hotel. And as right as we were, they were there waiting for us, and all the lads went out and party.
And you were delighted, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Delighted.
Me and Andy had a Chinese with our two missus here, and both of them were saying, "You sure you don't want to go out with the lads?" And we're like, no.
Anyway, at least they gave you the option anyway. You know.
Yeah, but it was an option. I think if we'd have took, we'd have been even more trouble. Anyway.
Julian, if I can come to you from the Northern Irish perspective, we heard it in the clip there, that there wasn't a lot to play for. But when you factor in the results 6 months earlier in March time, when the Republic had beaten the Northern Ireland team by 3-0, there were certain things from that game, and certainly with Billy Bingham, that didn't sit particularly well. So what's your kind of memories of that night and that occasion?
Well, it was very much a unique set of circumstances, because of the Republic needing to get at least a draw in Belfast, and also because of the terrible situation in terms of terrorism and violence leading up to the game. In the month before the game, 27 people were killed, which was the worst death toll in Northern Ireland for 17 years. So, obviously, things inevitably can spill over into a football arena. And I think from Northern Ireland's point of view, there's always a sense of wanting to beat the Republic anyway. And that's only natural when you have the cross-border rivalry that we have. But I think Billy Bingham did mention about the eligibility issue with the players, and he was reported to have said that the Republic had a team of mercenaries, and it wasn't really in the spirit of international football. Of course, those comments now, looking back, sound extremely dated, and Northern Ireland now take as much advantage of bloodlines in terms of sourcing players as anyone else. But I suppose probably that gave an added spark to the whole game and the backdrop. And it was always going to be a difficult night for the Republic of Ireland anyway, so possibly the comments from Billy Bingham were just sort of adding a little bit of unwanted flavour to the situation.
Cass, did some of those comments from Billy Bingham in particular, did they transcend into the Irish camps? And we've heard it there from Julian, Billy Bingham saying you're a bunch of mercenaries, the bloodline element as well. I know Aldo was quite vocal in his kind of comments coming back. But how did that sit well, or sit with you guys?
Well, I know a few lads took it. Well, they just didn't agree, really, more than anything. But it does add spice to games, and you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and Billy Bingham was no different. And he was from a generation where nearly every nation in the world of football, everybody was born there and played for their country. And sport has changed dramatically, Keith, hasn't it, in many shapes and forms. We've seen people play from, you know, many different continents, play for a nation or represent a nation. So it is a feeling of that time. And I don't think it fired us up to, let's shove Billy's words down his throat. We knew Northern Ireland had a lot of good players at that particular time. I mean, you met Jimmy Quinn there, who scored the goal. You know, Jimmy was a really good player that could have played for a lot bigger clubs than he did. And he was one of a good few. And, you know, I played against Mel Donaghy and with him, you know, at Chelsea. So, you know, Northern Ireland had a really good side and had some good talk. We knew it was going to be tough. I just think we didn't really take that too much to heart. We got accused by many different people. Even people, you know, obviously in Ireland would say the same thing, that, you know, some of these guys are mercenaries. And I never saw myself as that. I always saw myself that I had a granddad, you know, that lived with me and be part of my upbringing. And I had, same as I had an Italian ancestry, I had an Irish one. And that's really where it sat with me, and not much more. And I didn't go too deep into it, because I think you can sometimes get a little bit angry and a little bit upset, a bit bitter. And I think Billy probably had a bit of that in him, but that was from a manager of Northern Ireland at that particular time.
Cass, just on that, you know, what was happening in Northern Ireland at the time with Grey Steele and with the Shankill Road bombing, as Julian pointed out, it was one of the worst kind of, I suppose, spells for the Troubles. But how did you get on as players? Because I think as relationship, the players actually got on quite well. And was it true that the late Alan MacDonald actually came into the dressing room afterwards as well to kind of extend his congratulations?
Yeah, Alan was brilliant. And I got to know, obviously, Alan at his days at QPR. And he was as you boys would know, he was a no-nonsense centre-half that really took no prisoners. But he took defeat and, you know, us going through to the finals and congratulated us. And that, I think there was never any real problems between the Northern Ireland players and the Republic of Ireland. You know, we played with clubs together in England, some of us. Like I said, Mel Donaghy was with me at Chelsea. I had an Anton Rogan who I was with at Celtic. And there was a good few more. So it was always, that was never an issue. You know, we always got on okay. And I think everybody hated the fact that, you know, from the footballers' side, that, you know, there was violence and what was happening in Northern Ireland. None of us you know, really, we took it all to heart because we just didn't want it. We didn't want to be part of that.
Julian, what do you remember of the night in terms of the home crowd? Like, was everyone kind of, you know, in the bar beforehand getting really riled up for this? Because Daniel McDonald's piece with Gary Spain in the Irish Independent, he spoke about the fact that initially the Irish guys, the away fans in the crowd, they were quite, you know, it was quite cordial and all that. But all of a sudden, like the fans came in en masse, and Gary felt that there was just this change all of a sudden where the atmosphere just became a little bit kind of edgy straight away. What do you remember of that?
Well, I think probably considering there was a 10,000 crowd on the night, that it was probably as hostile as you could imagine. There's always, of course, a sense of tribalism anyway, but given the whole backdrop in Northern Ireland, as I mentioned earlier, and supporters are probably just quite happy to go along and beat an old rival. But back in those days, this would have been pre-Northern Ireland's wider initiatives about trying to make football for all sides of the community. And obviously, the Northern Ireland team would have been supported then by very, very large number of people from the strongly unionist background. So that, and you factor in the later kickoff and alcohol, and also as well in those days that Windsor Park was a fairly unwelcoming, bleak place in the sense that back in the early 90s, this was before most stadiums had been redeveloped, and Windsor Park was no exception. And I think we take it for granted that we all go to safe and pleasant stadiums to watch football. But back then, it was a fairly bleak place. Stands were quite ramshackle, and even the dressing room at Windsor Park in those days was very small, as I'm sure Tony might remember. And all these little things just seemed to kind of combine to create a very hostile cocktail for any visiting team. And in fact, just as an aside, I remember one of my own first games at Windsor Park as a Northern Ireland supporter was also in November in 1979, when Northern Ireland beat the Republic 1-0, and Martin O'Neill was actually playing that day, and it was an afternoon kickoff. So I remember even from an early age and up until the early 90s, going to the games and the atmosphere, it was fairly hostile, quite bleak, and there's such a scene change in the environment now that it's just night and day, really.
Cass, if I come back to you about the actual game and the other game that had a huge effect to the group, the Spanish playing the Danes. How aware were yous, obviously in a different era in terms of technology, or were yous aware of anything that was going on?
Yes, we knew that Spain were winning with, with 20 minutes to go, and we knew the equaliser was very important because obviously the draw got us to the World Cup finals if Spain managed to get the result over Denmark. So we was aware of it with minutes to go. But our game finished before, you know, at Windsor Park. We finished a couple of minutes ahead of Spain. So we were all there just waiting. And it was literally, the seconds felt like hours. It really did. Just waiting there and people looking up in the screen and just, you know, waiting for that voice. And so normally under these circumstances, Keith, you get false news, don't you? Yeah. Fake news.
I think Mick Byrne was central to that, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And Mick Byrne was certainly the culprit on numerous times of saying something. But, you know, I just remember being there and that few minutes waiting for the final result to come through, and then the cheers went off, and, you know, we was getting people, you know, saying that they were watching the game from via Spain and getting a game, and people were getting messages in. But it was a very nervy couple of minutes to an experience that was just, you know, everything we've just heard there about Northern Ireland at that particular time is spot on. You know, the stadium to the match and the fans and how fanatical and tribal they were. And just waiting there. And I must admit, it was one of the best reliefs I've ever had in my life. I've had a few.
What's it like as a player, Tony? Because obviously, How would you compare it even to, was it in 99 when you had your little scuffle in Turkey that night when we were knocked out trying to get to the Euros? But like, what's it like playing in atmospheres like that?
I loved it. You know, international football is very passionate, and sometimes in club football, you just don't get, there's a lot of build-up. I always found that international games, the build-up, even though you might arrive on Sunday and you might be, you know, come in easy, go and have a few pints with the lads like we did at that particular time, it was the build-up to the game. It felt, always felt big, international football, and especially World Cup qualifiers. So I used to love the build-up and the night before, you know, chatting in the room and people wandering around. And Keith knows what it's a, you know, just the time is passing slowly, but you're telling all sorts of stories and having fun, telling everyone what's going on at the clubs. And, you know, just it's a real build-up, international football. And, of course, once you cross the white line and then you have the national anthems and then you play the game, it's fantastic when you're winning. You know, that is what I loved about international football, because it just goes round the world and everybody sees it. I know Premier League does as well now, but at that time, the news travelled really quickly on what happened and how you done.
Julian, if I come to you and ask you about, obviously, this game on Thursday between the two nations again, is there a kind of an urge in the north to maybe get a friendly game of some description at Windsor Park, maybe?
I think probably at the moment it's really a sense of trying to get this game out of the way and our game against Austria on Sunday as well before there's any real focus on trying to get a return fixture with the Republic in Belfast. But I think it's probably going to be inevitable that that will happen, particularly in the context with the joint Euro under 21 bid. Between the countries, which such a situation, of course, is unimaginable when you think of the times gone past. But I think probably at some point there will be that opportunity to play a friendly. But I suppose, as Michael O'Neill often says, that the international programme is so congested, so it's just really an issue of trying to find an available date at some point. But it wouldn't surprise me if there was a friendly in Belfast within the next 2 to 3 years between the teams.
I know, Julian, that it's kind of crude demographic lines in Northern Ireland for a lot of things, but what is it like now in terms of, you know, obviously Michael O'Neill is your manager, he obviously has a different background as well, but what is it like in terms of comparing it to 25 years ago, when if you were Catholic in Windsor Park that night, it might have felt like a very hostile place because of the background. But it has moved on a lot now, and I'm just kind of wondering, is it true that a lot of Catholics are now very happy just to support Northern Ireland?
Well, I think that's probably quite true to a certain extent, but obviously these questions are matters for individual people and their conscience. For some Catholics, I suppose, if they're coming from a very staunch nationalist background, then they're never really going to be drawn to Northern Ireland. But I think just from anecdotal evidence, of course, that there would be some Catholics who would have an affinity with both teams. And I think that probably was manifested 2 years ago at Euro 2016, and the interaction between the supporters was really, really warm and sporting. But I think there's definitely an atmosphere that's being engendered at Windsor Park, where everyone is welcome, and it has been like this for a long, long time. And it's very much like a sea of green philosophy that the IFA had initiated many years ago. And when you have a modern football environment with the Northern Ireland team, where the sectarian singing has basically all but gone, and everyone is just there to back the team, and sideshows get parked and allegiances beyond football get parked, it can only be a good thing going forward. And I think the crowd is definitely a little bit more representative of the general population, although there is, of course, some way to go as well, and you can't be complacent either.
Is the anthem still a stumbling block?
I think for the rank and file of the Northern Ireland supporters, I don't think it is. Maybe for some of the Catholic community it would be. That's obviously another big question, that it's very difficult to please everyone all of the time. I think probably the anthem will remain as it is for the indefinitely, to be honest. I don't think there would be any real drive within the match-going Northern Ireland supporters to have it changed. It is difficult because anthems are quite sensitive subjects, you know, in various countries, and Northern Ireland is no different.
Cass, just before we go, I want to bring it back to the Republic, and I think it's fair to say we've had a testing 12 months or so, probably since that playoff game against Denmark, especially the one in Dublin. Where are you on the national team at the moment, then, Martin?
Well, I think it's very difficult, Keith, to take it out on Martin O'Neill too much, because I just feel England played the last time we played them. They played on the Monday night, and England played really well in Spain, didn't they? And they had Sterling score and Kane and Rashford. And the next night we played. And I know one particular journalist asked Andy Townsend a question about, you know, can we not play better, more style after we got beat 1-0? And Andy said at that night, which I think is spot on, and it's the same feeling of what I have, is he said, hold on a minute. They had Rashford, Sterling and obviously Kane. We had Hogan, O'Brien and Shane Long, who had come on. You know, we have got such a lack of quality, Keith, that you go through the two squads, you know, for this particular game. I think Northern Ireland got three Premier League players, Cathcart, Johnny Evans and Stephen Davis. And we haven't got many more. We have more, you know, like Seamus Coleman are in there. But defensively, we have a few. But across the board, Keith, we are so short. It's very hard to go straight for Martin O'Neill and saying, you've got to get us to tournaments. One thing, we go back to 94. If you looked at both teams, the amount of players that were playing in the top flight of football at that time for either side, it would be at least double, Keith. And then I think that tells the whole story of where the North are and certainly where we are at the moment.
Cass, listen, really appreciate you taking the time. Julian as well. And Cass, good to hear you sounding well after your health issues.
Yeah, cheers, Keith. Cheers,
lads.
Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.